Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to another edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, or ATF, plays a critical and integral role in securing the nation. To do this well requires ATF to focus its limited resources on key mission priorities. With us to discuss her efforts in this area is our very special guest, Melanie Stennett, Assistant Director, Office of Professional Responsibility and Security Operations, and Chief Security Officer at ATF. Melanie, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Alan Heath. Alan, welcome.
Thank you.
Melanie, I'd like to start off with understanding the context of your organization. Would you give us a brief history of the evolution and mission of ATF?
Yes. Let me start out first to explain what ATF is. That's an acronym that stands for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. How did all those commodities get into one agency for law enforcement and regulatory enforcement? And it all has a common theme that stems back to taxation. Well, in 1789, we actually had finished the Revolutionary War, and we had a Revolutionary War debt that we had to pay. So Alexander Hamilton came up with the idea of imposing a tax both on the domestic production and the importation of distilled spirits. And so that's kind of how we got our jurisdiction over alcohol. And of course, it wasn't the ATF back in 1789 that collected and enforced the tax, but it was a predecessor agency. Go a little bit forward in history to 1862, and an agency called the Bureau of Internal Revenue was established. So those would be the predecessors to our ATF agents. In 1886, the Department of Agriculture actually asked the Bureau of Internal Revenue to establish a laboratory. That would be the precursor of the ATF lab that we now have, which does things far beyond testing alcohol. We do firearms examination, fingerprint examination, DNA examination. We have chemists. We have tool mark examiners. Go forward to 1919, which is, of course, the Prohibition era, which lasted for about 14 years. And a Bureau of Prohibition was created to enforce the ban on intoxicating liquors. In 1930, the criminal side of the Bureau of Prohibition actually went over to the Department of Justice, and the side of the house that regulated alcohol actually stayed with Treasury. Now, in 1933, Prohibition ended, so the criminal agents went back to the Department of Treasury and were established in the Alcohol Tax Unit. In 1934, there was a new act called the National Firearms Act, and that was enacted because of some of the violent weapons that people during Prohibition had used to ply their trade. There was a tax attached to the making and the transportation and the manufacturing of those items. That's kind of how firearms got into the mix of ATF because of the taxation. Move forward to 1968, and you'll remember there had been a series of assassinations. Dr. King, President Kennedy, Robert Kennedy. So we set up a system whereby convicted felons, people who were drug users, people who were committed to mental institutions, people who had renounced their citizenship, they would be unable to purchase firearms. That jurisdiction fell to ATF. Moving forward to 1970, we also had the Organized Crime Control Act, and Title 11 of that act related to explosives crimes. So we had crimes that discussed making it unlawful to destroy property by use of explosives. And we also had, similar to what we have in the Gun Control Act, a licensing scheme for people who wanted to be in the industry of either selling firearms in the case of the Gun Control Act or selling explosives and dealing in explosives in the case of the explosives law. And ATF got jurisdiction over many of those crimes and of all the regulation of the explosives industry. Moving forward to 1972, ATF was still at that time the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax Division of the Internal Revenue Service. But in 1972, we became a separate agency within the Department of Treasury. In 1982, Congress made arson a federal crime and made it part of the explosives law. So it was a crime to destroy by fire or explosives property in interstate commerce. And so we got the jurisdiction for arson at that time. So arson doesn't appear in our name, but it is part of our jurisdiction. Moving forward to 2002, two things happened that have basically changed us into the modern ATF. The first one was the Safe Explosives Act. Under the Safe Explosives Act, you would need a permit, and there would be records checks on people who used explosives, people who dealt in explosives, and responsible people who worked for dealers. At the same time frame, the Homeland Security Act was passed, and that is the act that transferred ATF to the Department of Justice. Now, you need to understand that not all of ATF transferred. The alcohol tax and the alcohol regulation and the tobacco tax and regulation of the industry stayed back with the Department of Treasury in an agency known as the Tax and Trade Bureau. Since that time, we've added a few new responsibilities. One is called ESF-13, and that stands for Emergency Support Function, and that is under the National Response Framework. And what that means is during a disaster, a hurricane, a terrorist attack, or even just a purely local incident, ATF will coordinate the federal response and the federal assets that are used to assist the state and local and tribal authorities in those disasters. We just recently got some new authority under what's called the PACT Act, which has to do with contraband cigarette trafficking. That's pretty much the history of ATF.
It's a rich history, and you've done a wonderful job illustrating it and tying it back to your mission and how it's evolved. But with such a rich mission, with such an expansive mission, could you give us a sense of the scale of operations? What's the size of the modern day ATF budget, and what's the size of your workforce and your geographical footprint?
For the year 2010, the congressional appropriation gave us $1,121,000,000, approximately, dollars to do our business. And of that, there were $6 million to help us finish constructing the National Center for Explosives Training and Research. And of that amount, we can fund approximately 5,080 what they call FTEs, full-time equivalents. So that is our workforce, and our workforce is divided between a headquarters and a field population, most of it being in the field. So our field population is overseen by an office in headquarters known as the Office of Field Operations, and so they oversee the investigative and the regulatory functions throughout the nation for ATF. The field structure itself is divided into 25 field divisions, and each of those divisions is headed by what's known as the Senior Executive Service Special Agent in Charge. Going a little further down into the weeds, of those 25 divisions, we have 224 criminal enforcement offices, and so those are the people that investigate the violations. We have 61 industry operations offices. Those are the people that regulate the industries and go out and look at the inventories and the records of the various dealers of the commodities. So the field structure has about 2,250 special agents, 650 industry operations investigators, and about 540 support employees. Now, going back to our headquarters structure, you know, obviously you need more than people on the street, although we try to put as many resources as we can on the street, but you need people to oversee the operations. So we have an Office of Chief Counsel, and those folks help us promulgate regulations, oversee litigation in hand with the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office. They handle any personnel issues. They handle disclosure and forfeiture issues. And we also have attorneys in probably almost every one of the field divisions that handle the actions to take licenses away from industry members, give support to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and give advice and training for the agents and the IOIs out in the field. And IOI stands for Industry Operations Investigators. We have the Office of Management, where I previously was, and we have the budget function, the finance function, accounting, human resources, contracting, health and safety, environmental programs, logistics, and material management. We have a directorate known as the Enforcement and Program Services Office, and they actually oversee the National Tracing Center, Firearms Imports Branch, the National Firearms Act Branch, the Brady Branch, and a couple of other program-related services. The people who license the industry, the Firearms Licensing Center, and the Explosives Licensing Center. All of those functions are housed in Martinsburg, West Virginia. We have an Office of Public and Governmental Affairs, which is pretty much what it stands for. They oversee, you know, our appropriations as well as, you know, any legislative efforts that ATF might have some interest in, and they also deal with the media. We have an Office of Strategic Intelligence and Information, an Office of Science and Technology that basically oversees the computer function, our labs, and our forensic auditors, and an Office of Training and Professional Development. We have an international presence in that we have foreign offices in Mexico related to some of the Southwest border violence, Colombia, El Salvador, Canada, Lyon, The Hague, and Iraq. Now, in some of those places, there may just be one or two people, but it's still a presence overseas.
Quite a diverse organization. Melanie, now that you've given us a sense of the larger organization, perhaps you could tell us more about your area and specific role within ATF. What are your responsibilities and duties as the Assistant Director of the Office of Professional Responsibility and Security Operations and Chief Security Officer? Can you give us an idea of what functionality reports into you and how your office supports the overall mission?
Well, I'd be very happy to tell you that, and I have to admit that it's something I'm learning on a day-to-day basis. I was previously the Chief Financial Officer. I'm the Principal Advisor to the Director and Deputy Director of ATF in planning and overseeing and coordinating our security and emergency preparedness functions, our inspection functions, and our internal affairs activities. Emergency security activities include things such as our background investigation. Now, ATF is very proud of the fact that since the time we were at Treasury, we actually have delegated authority to conduct our own background investigations. Currently, in light of some of the Homeland Security presidential directives, there's oversight of background functions now by OMB, which is the Office of Management and Budget, OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, and the Office of Defense and National Intelligence. And so our authority stems from them, and every year that we've had an audit, we've been successful in maintaining our ability to do those backgrounds. We have the ability to expedite things. We also have some responsibilities under HSPD 12, and that's the one that talks about badging and access to facilities. We also have the COOP, the Continuity of Operations function, as well as participating in some of the national exercises that sometimes you hear about in the news. And we use those as opportunities to test and fine-tune both our emergency response capability, whether people know where they need to go to in an emergency and whether they can get there quickly, and also to test the emergency notification system to make sure that it's working well. And after each test, we continue to refine to make sure that it gets even better. We're also involved in planning for things like the pandemic flu and other instances of flus or illnesses that come up that may cause you to operate outside of your headquarters facility. The Office of Inspection is actually the office that conducts compliance reviews at ATF, and we conduct reviews both of our headquarters function as well as our field offices to ensure that we have good internal controls and that we're operating within all the laws and regulations and DOJ and ATF policies and procedures, that we're protecting our financial assets and all of our assets, all of our property, and that our programs have integrity. And we do those reviews every 4 years. We'd like to do them more frequently, but because of some, you know, staffing challenges, we've had to convert to a four-year cycle. One of the reasons I was put in this position is because with my CFO experience and my counsel experience, I have an ability to know our programs and you know, what we may need to do to test to make sure that they still have integrity, as well as understanding the financial system and what the CFO auditors look at and where we need to be crunching down on when we go in and internally review ourselves. And finally, we have the internal affairs function, which basically conducts integrity investigations, both criminal and administrative in nature, and any other sensitive investigation that the director might assign to us, as well as the IG's office. They may refer something to us. And we also conduct shooting reviews, and that's basically what it sounds like. We also are trying to find some automated tools that we can use for a trend analysis so that we can be more proactive with integrity investigations. And we work closely with our Professional Review Board, our Office of Chief Counsel, and our HR to streamline operations so that people get a prompt and fair hearing, but that they at least get a penalty or a disciplinary notice or they get cleared in a relatively quickly time frame so that basically you don't have agents out there or employees out there worrying about what's going to happen to them.
We ask questions about your challenges, and I want to expand it to include your previous role. So what are your three main challenges, and how have you addressed those challenges?
The three main challenges I saw as CFO, and that's really the one I can speak best to, only having been a week on the current job, is number one, assuring that the budget that we have meets the priorities of ATF. And so in budget formulation years, that would mean understanding what our strategic plan is going to require us to do and how much money we're going to need to do that, and making sure we have good, solid justifications that will pass muster with the Department of Justice, the Office of Management and Budget, and the Hill. And then once we get into the year where we have an appropriation from Congress, making sure that we can cover all of our priorities and continually monitor our accounts to make sure that we are spending the money the way we're supposed to. And if we, for some reason, have an expense that goes over what we thought, that we have an ability towards the end of the year to relook at our accounts and see where we can pull money from and fund other priorities. We also try to pull money as near as possible in July so that we have, if there looks like there's going to be some money left over at the end of the year, we can get a good acquisition plan in place and buy the things that we need to do our job. I think the second challenge was obtaining a clean audit opinion. In the history of ATF, I think we've always had unqualified opinions, which for your listeners will sound a little odd because unqualified sounds like you did something bad, but it actually is a good thing because it means that the CFO auditors had no qualifications when it came to looking at your statement. They found everything to be according to Hoyle, but you can still have an unqualified audit opinion and have significant deficiencies and material weaknesses. And we in ATF unfortunately had a material weakness in our accounts payable, our accrual, for about 2 to 3 years. And so we recently got rid of that, and we had a clean audit opinion last year with no material weakness and no internal control findings. And so that's a good thing, but the challenge still remains to keep that good record. And you find in any organization, employees start to become complacent. So we just always need to stay on top of it, make sure they're trained, make sure they're up to speed on what they need to do. And I guess the third challenge would be attracting and retaining employees in key office of management positions. Having people in those positions, attracting them, and even positions at lower grade levels in the financial management field is difficult because they're hard to find.
How is the ATF using its resources more effectively? We will ask Melanie Stennett, Assistant Director, Office of Professional Responsibility and Security Operations at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.